A couple of things before our gospel. I should have mentioned this earlier and forgot. One of Mark's favorite words is immediately. And it's not in today's readings, unfortunately. But Jesus is, when you read Mark, you get the sense that Jesus is just going, you know, this way, that way, all the time. He speaks a word of healing and immediately, just like that. So I was checking that out to make sure I was correct on that. And I just read the first chapter. There were three, maybe even four immediately's in one as soon as, you know. So, and that's important because today's gospel is contrast that in that image we have of Jesus. And some of you might remember a few weeks ago I mentioned one of Mark's techniques in writing his story of Jesus was the sandwich. And today is another example of a sandwich. And actually there's a remnant of another sandwich. So a sandwich is when he tells a story and then he breaks it off and then tells another story in the middle and then finishes the first story at the end. And he does that because those two stories kind of bounce off each other and interpret each other. And when we break down, you know, the gospel in these readings, we don't always see that kind of stuff. For example, today's reading, when you right in the middle, there's verse 34, and then the next paragraph, it's verse 53. So what we left out is the feeding of the 5,000 in Mark. See, because we have this bread of life, that's the introduction to that. So we go to John's gospel. And that's okay, I guess, because it's a nice introduction to the bread of life theme. But we miss the sandwich, see. And they interpret each other. So, okay, third thing. I'm preaching on this, obviously. And I have another story, though, that's also a text for my sermon. And it's when my daughter was maybe 5.5 years old. We were living in Northfield, Minnesota at the time. And Mary's sister lived in St. Paul. And I think Kay and Jim went with their church to Holden Village for a couple of weeks. And it was an adult thing. And so the two kids, Julie and Kathy, some of you remember Kathy. She used to live in Tacoma and come down here. And came down to stay with us for 2 weeks. So our daughter, Jennifer, was just delighted. She was you have to remember, Jennifer is an only child, right? So her cousins were coming, and it went great. But then after 5-6 days, something like that, a week afterwards, it was a Saturday afternoon, I think, because I was home. And, there were Julie and Kathy, and we couldn't find Jen. We looked all over the place. Looked at the basement, the attic, which was kind of a playroom, outside, all the rooms. No Jennifer. And then finally, we had kind of a back room in that old house, and there was a long, narrow, dark closet. And Mary opened it up, and there was Jen standing in the dark. And Mary said, "Oh, we were worried. We didn't know where you were. What are you doing in here?" And Jen said, "I just wanted to be lonely for a while." It's a good introduction to the reading. Okay, now we can sing. Oh, do you want to sing it?
What? Okay. I'm waiting for the cue.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's coming later. Okay. God's beloved people. The gospel reading for today, as I mentioned, offers a little different portrait of Jesus that we rarely consider. Our image of Jesus, I think, is one of this brisk and efficient Jesus. I mean, he's full of purpose, but short on time. And he's so there he goes, striding from village to synagogue to hilltop to seaside, a whirlwind of miracles and parables and life-changing conversations swirling about him. You know, kind of like Superman, you know, faster than a speeding bullet, able to leap tall locomotives or however that went. And if not Superman, then at least a super type A workaholic type. A superhero striving to save the world before the clock, his clock runs down. But a breathless zealot is not what emerges from this week's gospel reading. Did I read the gospel? Oh my. I'll pick it up there. I gotta read the gospel. The apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all they had done and taught. They had just returned. Remember a couple of weeks ago he sent them out two by two? And so this is their return. And he said to them, come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest a while. For many were coming and going and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a deserted place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they hurried there on foot from all the towns and arrived ahead of them. As he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And then follows the feeding of the 5,000. And when they crossed over, again, they tried to go leave again. When they had crossed over the lake, they came to the land of Gennesaret and moored the boat. When they got out of the boat, people at once recognized him and rushed about the whole region and began to bring the sick on mats to whenever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into the villages or cities or farms, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and begged him that they might touch even the fringe of his cloak, and all who touched it were healed. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
You may be seated. So today, as you heard, we find instead of this rush, breathless zealot type, we find a Jesus who recognizes and honors and tends to his own tiredness. We notice a teacher who is aware of his disciples' exhaustion and responds with tenderness. We find a Savior who probes below the surface of our frantic, productive lives and pinpoints the hungers, our work-obsessed culture won't even allow us to name. The hunger for space, reflection, solitude, rest, or as Jennifer put it, just to be lonely for a while. I wonder if the striving, hurrying Jesus, you know, that I at least usually think of, is really Jesus at all. Maybe he's a distorted mirror image of our busy, busy culture, our dread of wasting time. Maybe he's a pseudo-Jesus we use to excuse our own hectic lifestyle. So our gospel today is an odd one. It's a bit strange. It's kind of a cut-and-paste job. You know, that brackets Jesus feeding of the 5,000 to focus instead on this, you know, the less spectacular events that precede and follow it. The first section describes briefly the return of the disciples from their first ministry tour, you know, their inauguration journey into being apostles. They're exhilarated and exhausted. They have stories to tell. I mean, thrilling stories, I imagine, of healing, exorcism, preaching. But Jesus also senses that there are darker stories as well, failures and rejection, probably, stories of doubt. In whatever the case, Jesus recognizes that the disciples need a break. Yeah? They're tired, overstimulated, underfed, and in need of some solitude. And Jesus himself is not in top form. I mean, he has just lost John the Baptist, his beloved cousin and prophet, the one who baptized him, and spent all those years in the wilderness preparing the way for him. And worse than that, he lost him to a senseless murder. And maybe Jesus' own end feels closer, huh? Or his own vocation seems more ominous. So let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while, he says to his disciples as the crowds around them throng. Come away with me, is one of another translation put it. And we hear both understanding and longing in those words. Jesus wants to provide a time of rest and recuperation for his friends, but he too is weary. And the longing he articulates is his own. There's a woman named Debbie Thomas who writes a commentary on some of this kind of stuff. I suppose you'd call that a blog. And one of my pastor friends copied a little part of it and gave it to me because he figured I couldn't find it on my own. And I didn't think of this on my own either. But she says, she advises us, pay more attention to those throwaway passages in the Gospels, those little transition verses which often precede or follow, you know, all the big main stuff, the big stuff. Little verses like this, Luke 5. But Jesus often withdrew to a lonely place and prayed. Or Mark 11. The next day they were leaving Bethany, and Jesus was hungry. Or Matthew 8, simply, Jesus was sleeping. Or maybe my favorite of this little list is in Mark, the 7th chapter. They went to a town and he didn't want anyone to know which house he was staying in. See, in these little minor verses, we see essential glimpses of Jesus' humanity, his need to withdraw, his desire for solitude and meditation, his just plain hunger, his sleepiness, and even his inclination occasionally to hide. These glimpses enhance this human divine incarnational wonder of Jesus. They make it richer and all the more mysterious. They remind me that the doctrine of the incarnation, God become human, taking on flesh, is Christianity's best gift to the world. God, creator of the cosmos, hungers, sleeps, eats, grieves, rests, hides, withdraws. In all these, you know, mundane but crucial ways, our God is like us. Our God rests. Now, of course, this isn't new. If you started to read the Bible from the beginning, the first thing that you would read, of course, is in Genesis, is the creation story where God rested on the seventh day and called the Sabbath holy. Honoring this is no small feat in our day and age, where every day and hour is measured in profits gained or advantages lost. It doesn't come naturally to us anymore. We resist it. To remember that God rested, that Jesus rested, is to be both, I think, somewhat startled and humbled. I mean, who do we think we are to claim that we don't need a break when Jesus himself took one? The Sabbath, the day of rest, is the only thing in that whole creation story of Genesis that God called holy. Maybe we should pay attention. But I digress. Back to the gospel. Jesus is also like us in that sometimes his best laid plans, in this case to find rest, get all messed up and go awry. Jesus' retreat by boat idea fails. The crowds anticipate his plan and follow on foot. By the time he and the disciples reach their longed-for destination, the crowds are waiting, and the quiet sanctuary is nowhere to be found. So what does Jesus do? Does he run? Does he turn the boat around and sail away? No. Jesus saw the crowd as he stepped from the boat and had compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. And then follows the feeding of the 5,000. The second half of this week's gospel is almost, did you catch it? It's almost a repeat of that first half. The feeding of the 5,000 is over. Jesus once again insists that the disciples get back in the boat and sail away. Vacation attempt, take two. Let's go be lonely for a while. But once again, the crowds anticipate Jesus' plan. Word spreads that where he's going. As soon as the boat lands at Gennesaret, the crowds go wild, pushing and jostling to get close to Jesus. It reminds me of that scene from Jesus Christ Superstar.
See our eyes, we can hardly see. See us stand, we can hardly walk. We believe you can make us whole. See the tongues, they can hardly talk. See our skin, we're a mass of blood. Change our lives, and you know you can. We believe you can make us well. You're the hope of the poor, poor man. We will you touch, will you mend me, Christ? Won't you touch, will you heal me, Christ? Will you kiss, you can kill me, Christ? Christ, won't you kiss, won't you pay me, Christ? See our eyes, we can hardly see. See us stand, we can hardly walk. We believe you can make us whole. See our tongues, we can hardly talk. See our skin, we're a mass of blood. Change our lives, we know you can. We believe you can make us well. You're the hope of the poor, poor man.
They carry their sick to him on mats. In every village and city Jesus approaches, swarms of people needing healing line the marketplace. They press against him. They plead. They beg to touch the fringe of his robe and receive healing. And Jesus' response? Once again, his response is compassion. All who touched him were healed. We ought to envy Jesus' stark awareness of such need. Here in our cozy middle-class life, it's sometimes easy to pass the buck on compassion. I mean, whether I'm looking at the needs of my own family, my self-sufficient friends and neighbors, or the whole wider community, it's tempting to tell myself that, well, nothing's all that urgent. Nothing all that urgent is at stake. It can all wait. After all, what depends on me? Not that much. Or does it? What this week's gospel is about is this ongoing and essential tension between compassion in self-care. And the great thing for us to remember is that Jesus lived with that tension too. On the one hand, he was unapologetic about his need for rest and solitude. There was no shame when his disciples needed a break. On the other hand, he never allowed his weariness to blunt his compassion. He practiced a kind of balance that allowed his love for others, his own inner hungers and needs, and the urgency of the world's needs to exist in a kind of productive tension. So what does it mean for us? Not sure. Strive for balance. Recognize weariness when you feel it. Don't apologize for being human. Take breaks. Be lonely for a while. Yes, all those essential things. But maybe also this. We live in a world of great need. Sheep will die without their shepherds. There are stakes, and sometimes God makes costly demands on our hearts. While balance remains the ideal, it won't always be available in the short term. Sometimes we will have to err. We have to bend one way or the other. If that happens, in what direction should we bend? If this gospel story is our example, seek rest, of course, but err on the side of compassion. Grace and peace and all that good stuff for the sheep. At least that's what Jesus did. Amen.